Delavan Lake in Delavan, Wisconsin, your ultimate destination for year-round leisure getaways, family retreats, weddings, and group meetings. Also supporting the WGTD Radio Theater is the not-for-profit Brown Ulster Performing Arts Foundation, located in Salem Lakes, Wisconsin. The mission of the foundation is to develop and promote excellence in the performing arts in Wisconsin and the Midwest. And now, Mr. Peabody.
One of the great movies from 1970 was Patton, starring George C. Scott.
That opening scene was unforgettable, Mr. Peabody.
Indeed, Sherman. And we bring it to you now. Oh, and by the way, the writers have toned down the language a bit for our audience.
Now, I want you to remember that no one ever won a war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb guy die for his country. Men, all this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the wars, a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle. When you were kids, you all admired the champion marble shooter, the fastest runner, the big league ball player, the toughest boxers. Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser. Americans play to win all the time. Now, I wouldn't give a hoot in hell for a man who lost and laughed. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war. Because the very thought of losing is hateful to Americans. Now, an army is a team. It lives, eats, sleeps, fights as a team. This individuality stuff is a bunch of crap. Bilious idiots who wrote that stuff about individuality for the Saturday Evening Post don't know anything more about real battle than they do about anything else. Now, we have the finest food and equipment, the best spirit, and the best men in the world. You know, by God, I actually pity those poor souls we're going up against. By God, I do. We're not just going to shoot them. We're going to cut out their living guts and use them to grease the treads of our tanks. We're going to murder those lousy Huns by the bushel. Now, some of you boys, I know, I'm wondering whether or not you'll chicken out under fire. Don't worry about it. I can assure you that you will all do your duty. The Nazis are the enemy. Wade into them, spill their blood, shoot them in the belly. When you put your hand into a bunch of goo that a moment before was your best friend's face, you'll know what to do. Now, there's another thing I want you to remember. I don't want to get any messages saying that we are holding our position. We're not holding anything. Let the Hun do that. We are advancing constantly, and we're not interested in holding on to anything except the enemy. We're going to hold on to him by the nose, and we're going to kick him in the rear. We're going to kick the hell out of him all the time, and we're going to go through him like crap through a goose. Now, there's one thing that you men will be able to say when you get back home. And you may thank God for it. 30 years from now, when you're sitting around your fireside with your grandson on your knee, and he asks you, what did you do in the great World War II? You won't have to say, well, I shoveled crap in Louisiana. All right, now you know how I feel. Oh, I will be proud to lead you wonderful guys into battle, anytime, anywhere. That's all.
Wow, Mr. Peabody, that was a great scene.
Yes, it was, Sherman. But now I think we should lighten it up just a bit. From 1987, Moonstruck. The scene in Ronnie's apartment where Loretta is preparing some lunch for Ronnie.
You ready for that coffee?
Loretta, what's that smell?
I'm making you a steak.
You don't have to help me.
I know that. I do what I want.
I like it well done.
You'll eat this bloody to feed your blood.
This is good,
Loretta.
Where'd Johnny find you?
He knew my husband who died.
How'd he die?
Bus hit him.
Fast.
Instantaneous.
When did you get engaged?
Yesterday.
Why?
Why what?
I don't know.
So, 5 years ago, your hand got cut off, and your woman left you for another man. No woman since then?
No.
Stupid.
When did your husband get hit by the bus?
7 years ago.
How many men since then?
Just Johnny.
Stupid yourself.
No. Unlucky. I have been unlucky.
I don't care about luck. You understand me? It ain't that.
What? Do you think you're the only one who ever shed a tear?
Why are you talking to me?
You got any whiskey? How about you give me a glass of whiskey?
She was right to leave me.
You think so?
Yes.
You really are stupid, you know that?
You don't know nothing about it.
I was raised that a girl gets married young. I didn't get married until I was 28. I met a man. I loved him. I married him. He wanted to have a baby right away. I said no. Then he got hit by a bus. No man, no baby, no nothing. I did not know that man was a gift that I could not keep. I didn't know that. You tell me a story and you think you know what it means. But I see what the true story is, and you can't. She didn't leave you. You can't see who you are. I can see everything. You are a wolf.
I'm a wolf?
The big part of you has no words, and it's a wolf. The woman was a trap for you. She caught you, and you could not get away. So, you chewed off your own foot. That was the price you had to pay to be free. Johnny had nothing to do with it. You did what you had to do, between you and you. And I know I'm right. I don't care what you say. And now you're afraid because you found out the big part of you is a wolf that has the courage to bite off its own hand to save it from the trap of the wrong love. That's why there has been no woman since that wrong woman. You are scared to death of what that wolf would do if you make that mistake again.
What are you doing?
I'm telling you your life.
Stop it.
No.
Why are you marrying Johnny? He's a fool.
Because I have no luck.
He made me look the wrong way, and I cut off my hand. He could make you look the wrong way, and you could cut off your whole head.
I am looking where I should look to become a bride.
A bride without a head.
A wolf without a foot.
And Loretta and Ronnie continue when he brings her to his apartment after a night at the opera.
And what do you know? Okay, you tell me my life, I'll tell you yours. I'm a wolf. You run to the wolf to me, and that don't make you no lamb. You're going to marry my brother? You want to sell your life short? Playing it safe is just about the most dangerous thing a woman like you could do. I mean, you waited for the right man the first time. Why didn't you wait for the right man again?
He didn't come.
I'm here.
You're late. You know, we had a deal. You told me if I came with you to the opera, then you'd leave me alone forever. And I came with you. Now, I'm going to marry your brother, and you're going to leave me alone forever, right? A person can see where they've messed up in their life, and they can change the way they do things. And they can even change their luck. So, maybe. Maybe my nature does draw me to you. That don't mean I have to go with it. I can take hold of myself, and I can say yes to some things and no to other things that are going to ruin everything. I can do that. Otherwise, you know what? What good is this stupid life that God gave us? I mean, for what? Are you listening to me?
Yeah, everything seems like nothing to me again. I want you in my bed. I don't care if I burn in hell. I don't care if you burn in hell. The past and the future is a joke to me. I see that. There's nothing. I see there ain't here. The only thing that's here is you and me. Come upstairs. I don't care why you come. No, that's not what I mean, Loretta. I love you. They told you love is and didn't know this either, but love don't make things nice. It ruins everything. It breaks your heart. It makes things a mess. We aren't here to make things perfect. Snowflakes are perfect. Stars are perfect. Not us. Not us. We are here to ruin ourselves and to break our hearts and love the wrong people and die. I mean that all that storybooks are bull. Now, I want you to come upstairs with me and get into my bed. Come on. Come on. Come on.
What a great movie, Mr. Peabody.
Indeed, Chairman. The film grossed $80 million in the United States and won 3 Oscars, including Best Actress, Cher, and Best Supporting Actress, Olympia Dukakis. Now let's turn to a more, shall we use the term, creepy movie. Here's a scene from Silence of the Lambs.
Good morning. Dr. Lecter, my name is Clarice Starling. May I speak with you?
You're one of Jack Crawford's, aren't you?
I am, yes.
May I see your credentials?
Certainly.
Closer, please. Closer. That expires in 1 week. You're not real FBI, are you?
I'm still in training at the academy.
Jack Crawford sent a trainee to me.
Yes, I'm a student. I'm here to learn from you. Maybe you can decide for yourself whether or not I'm qualified to do that.
That is rather slippery of you, Agent Starling. Sit, please.
Did you do all these drawings, Doctor?
Ah, that is the Duomo seen from the Belvedere. Do you know Florence?
All that detail just from memory, sir?
Memory, Agent Starling, is what I have instead of a view.
Well, perhaps you'd care to lend us your view on this questionnaire, sir.
Oh, no. You were doing fine. You had been courteous and receptive to courtesy. You had even established trust. And now this ham-handed segue into your questionnaire, it won't do.
I'm only asking you to look at this, Doctor. Either you will or you won't.
Yeah. Jack Crawford must be very busy indeed if he's recruiting help from the student body. Busy hunting that new one, Buffalo Bill. What a naughty boy he is. Do you know why he's called Buffalo Bill? Please tell me. The newspapers won't say.
Well, it started as a bad joke in Kansas City homicide. They said this one likes to skin his victims.
Why do you think he removes their skins, Agent Starling? Thrill me with your acumen.
It excites him. Most serial killers keep some sort of trophies from their victims.
I didn't.
No. No, you ate yours.
You send that through now. Oh, Agent Starling, you think you can dissect me with this blunt little tool?
No, I thought that your knowledge
You're
would
so
help
ambitious, it. Aren't you? Do you know what you look like with your good bag and your cheap shoes? You look like a rube. A well-scrubbed, hustling rube with a little taste. Good nutrition's given you length of bone, but you're not more than one generation from poor white trash, are you, Agent Starling? And that accent you've tried so desperately to shed, pure West Virginia. What is your father, dear? Is he a coal miner? Does he stink of the lamp? How quickly the boys found you. All those tedious, sticky fumblings in the back seats of cars, while you could only dream of getting out, getting anywhere, getting all the way to the FBI.
You see a lot, Doctor. But are you strong enough to point that high-powered perception at yourself? What about it? Why don't you look at yourself and write down what you see? Or maybe you're afraid to.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. You fly back to school now, little starling. Fly, fly, fly. Fly, fly, fly. Fly, fly, fly.
That scene was so scary, Mr. Peabody. I really got creeped out by it.
Yes, Sherman. And continuing in the same vein, we now bring you 2 scenes from Psycho. First, when Norman invites Mary to eat in the motel office.
I've caused you some trouble?
No, Mother, my mother, what is the phrase? She isn't quite herself today.
You shouldn't have bothered. I really don't have that much of an appetite.
I'm sorry. I wish people could apologize for other people.
Don't worry about it. But as long as you've made a supper, we may as well eat it, huh?
It might be nicer, warmer in the office. Eating in an office. Too officious, even for me. I have the parlor behind this, if you'd like. Please, sit down, on the sofa.
You're very kind.
It's all for you. I'm not hungry. Please, go ahead. You eat like a bird.
You'd know, of course.
Not really. I hear that expression, that one eats like a bird, is really a falsity, because birds eat a tremendous lot. Well, I don't know anything about birds. My hobby is stuffing things, taxidermy, and I guess I just rather stuff birds because, well, I hate the look of beasts when they're stuffed, foxes and chimps and all. Some people even stuff dogs and cats, but I can't. I think only birds look well stuffed because they're rather passive to begin with, most of them.
It's a strange hobby. Curious, I mean.
Uncommon, too.
I imagine so.
It's not as expensive as you'd think. Cheap, really. Needles, thread, sawdust. The chemicals are all that cost anything.
A man should have a hobby.
It's more than a hobby, sometimes. A hobby is supposed to pass the time, not fill it.
Is your time so empty?
Oh, no. I run the office, tend the cabins and grounds, do little chores for Mother. Well, the one she allows I might be capable of doing.
You go out with friends?
Friends? Who needs friends? A boy's best friend is his mother.
And now, the ending, after Norman is in police custody.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. But I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad, and in the end he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything but just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. They know I can't move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
So freaked out by that movie, Mr. Peabody. When they found that corpse in the cellar, I jumped out of my chair.
Alfred Hitchcock truly was a master of suspense.
I'll say so, Mr. Peabody. Maybe we should lighten it up a little bit. How about some lines from one of my favorites, Airplane?
Oh, okay. For those you listeners who delight in sophomoric comedy, here are some lines from Airplane.
You'd better tell the captain we've got to land as soon as we can. This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a building with patients, but that's not important right now.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Ted, can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit drinking.
Randy, are you all right?
Oh, Dr. Rumack, I'm scared. I've never been so scared. And besides, I'm 26 and I'm not married.
We're going to make it. You've got to believe that.
Dr. Rumick, do you have any idea when we'll be landing?
Pretty soon. How are you bearing up?
Well, to be honest, I've never been so scared. But at least I have a husband.
Oh.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
You got a letter from headquarters this morning.
What is it?
It's a big building where generals meet, but that's not important.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue.
I love that movie every time I see it, Mr. Peabody.
I'm sure you do, Sherman. You know, one movie that is one of everyone's favorites is The Wizard of Oz.
It sure is one of mine, Mr. Peabody. Where on earth do they find all those people to play munchkins?
Speaking of munchkins, let's go to Munchkinland when Dorothy meets the Wicked Witch of the West.
I thought you said she was dead.
No, that was her sister, the Wicked Witch of the East. This is the Wicked Witch of the West, and she's worse than the other one was.
Who killed my sister? Who killed the Witch of the East? Was it you? Answer me!
Leave her alone.
You stay out of this. I'm here for vengeance. So it was you, was it? You killed her, didn't you?
No. It was an accident. I didn't mean to kill anybody. Really, I didn't.
Didn't mean it, eh? Accident, eh? Well, my little pretty, I can cause accidents too. And this is how I do it.
Aren't you forgetting the ruby slippers?
Oh, the slippers. Yes, the slippers. Oh, they're gone. The ruby slippers. What have you done with them? Give them back to me or I'll...
It's too late. There they are, and there they'll stay.
Oh.
Give me back my slippers. I'm the only one that knows how to use them. They're of no use to you. Give them back to me. Give them back.
Keep tight inside of them. Their magic must be very powerful, or she wouldn't want them so badly.
You stay out of this, Glinda, or I'll fix you as well.
Oh, rubbish. You have no power here. Be gone before somebody drops a house on you, too.
Very well. I'll bide my time. And as for you, my fine lady, it's true. I can't attend to you here and now as I'd like. But just try to stay out of my way. Just try. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Let's turn to some great dramas now, Sherman, starting with On the Waterfront.
Look, kid, how much you weigh, son? When you weighed 168 pounds, you were beautiful. You could have been another Billy Conn. That skunk we got you for a manager, he brought you along too fast.
It wasn't him, Charlie. It was you. Remember that night in the garden you came down to my dressing room and said, "Kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson." You remember that? This ain't your night. My night. I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors on the ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You were my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it. It was you, Charlie.
And now, Dirty Harry.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or only five? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I kind of lost track myself. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
And that riveting cart roam scene from A Few Good Men.
Colonel Jessup, did you order the cold red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled to.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you could possibly fathom. You weep for San Diego, and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that San Diego's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about it at parties. You want me to on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just say thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
Yeah, damn right I did.
Here is our version of Bogey and Bacall in To Have and Have Not.
Who was the girl, Steve?
Who was what girl?
The one who left you with such a high opinion of women. She must have been quite a gal. You think I lied to you, don't you? Well, it just happens there's $30-odd here. Not enough boat fare or any other kind of fare. Just enough to be able to say no if I feel like it. And you can have it if you want it.
I'm sorry, Slim, but I still say you're awful good. And I wouldn't...
You wouldn't take anything from anybody, would you?
That's right.
You know, Steve, you're not very hard to figure. Only at times. Sometimes I know exactly what you're going to say. Most of the time. The other times you're just a stinker.
What'd you do that for?
I was wondering whether I'd like it.
What's the decision?
I don't know yet. It's even better when you help. Sure you won't change your mind about this?
Uh-huh.
This belongs to me, and so do my lips. I don't see any difference.
I do.
Okay. You know, you don't have to act with me. You don't have to say anything, and you don't have to do anything. Not a thing. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
And how can we not go to that famous scene from Gone with the Wind?
What are you doing?
I'm leaving you, my dear. All you need now is a divorce, and your dreams of Ashley can come true.
Oh, no. No, you're wrong, terribly wrong. I don't want a divorce over it. But I knew tonight when I knew I loved you. I ran home to tell you, oh, darling, darling.
Oh, please don't go on with this. Leave us some dignity to remember out of our marriage. Spare us this last.
This last? Oh, Rhett, do listen to me. I must have loved you for years. Only I was such a stupid fool. I didn't know it. Please believe me. You must care. Melly said you did.
I believe you. What about Ashley Wilkes?
I never really loved Ashley.
You certainly gave a good imitation of it up till this morning. No, Scarlett. I tried everything. If you'd only met me halfway, even when I came back from London.
No, I was so glad to see you. I was, Rhett. But you were so nasty.
And then... when you were sick and it was my fault, I hoped against hope you'd call for me, but you didn't.
I wanted you. Oh, I wanted you desperately, but I didn't think you wanted me.
It seems we've been at cross purposes, doesn't it? But it's no use now. As long as there was Bonnie, there was a chance that we might be happy. I like to think that Bonnie was you, a little girl again, before the war and poverty had done things to you. She was so like you. And I could pet her and spoil her as I wanted to spoil you. But when she went, she took everything.
Oh, Red, please don't say that. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for everything.
My darling, you're such a child. You think that by saying I'm sorry, all the past can be corrected. Here, take my handkerchief. Never at any crisis of your life have I known you to have a handkerchief.
Oh, Red, where are you going?
I'm going to Charleston. Back where I belong.
Oh, please, please take me with you.
No. I'm through with everything here. I want peace. I want to see if somewhere there isn't something left in life of charm and grace. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I only know that I love you.
That's your misfortune.
Oh, Red. Red, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Probably no better opening scene than this from The Godfather.
I believe in America. America has made my fortune. And I raised my daughter in the American fashion. I gave her freedom, but I taught her never to dishonor her family. She found a boyfriend, not an Italian.
She went to the movies with him. She stayed out late. I did not protest. 2 months ago, he took her for a drive with another boyfriend. They made her drink whiskey. And then they tried to take advantage of her. She resisted. She kept her honor, so they beat her like an animal. When I went to the hospital, her nose was broken. Her jaw was shattered, held together by wire. She couldn't even weep because of her pain. But I wept. Why did I weep? She was the light of my life, beautiful girl. Now she will never be beautiful again. Sorry. I went to the police like a good American. Those two boys were brought to trial. The judge sentenced him to 3 years in prison. Suspended sentence. Suspended sentence. They went free that very day. I stood in the courtroom like a fool. And those two bastards, they smiled at me. Then I said to my wife, "For justice, we must go to Don Corleone."
Why did you go to the police? Why didn't you come to me first?
What do you want of me? Tell me anything, but do what I beg you to do.
What is that? That I cannot do.
I'll give you anything you ask.
We've known each other for many years, but this is the first time you come to me for counsel, for help. I can't remember the last time that you invited me to your house for a cup of coffee, even though my wife is godmother to your only child. Well, let's be frank here. You never wanted my friendship. And you were afraid to be in my debt.
I did not want to get into trouble.
I understand. You found paradise in America. Had a good trade, made a good living. The police protected you. And there were courts of law, and you don't need a friend of me. But now you come to me and you say, "Don Corleone, give me justice." But you don't ask with respect. You don't offer friendship. You don't even think to call me godfather. Instead, you come into my house on the day my daughter is to be married, and you ask me to do murder for money?
I ask you for justice.
That is no justice. Your daughter is still alive.
Then they can suffer then, as she suffers. How much shall I pay you?
Buonasera. Buonasera, what have I ever done to make you treat me so disrespectfully? Had you come to me in friendship, then this scum that ruined your daughter would be suffering this very day. And if by chance, if an honest man such as yourself should make enemies, then they would become my enemies. And then they would fear you.
Be my friend, Godfather.
You know, Mr. Peabody, you won't allow me to see most of these movies.
Well, Sherman, they do have some rather adult scenes in them. And there will be plenty of time when you get older to view these classics.
How about some scenes from television, Mr. Peabody?
Perfect timing, my boy. As most of us who are familiar with the show Seinfeld, Elaine worked for a time at the J. Peterman Catalog Company.
Sure, Mr. Peabody. She had to write those silly ads.
But did you know there is an actual J. Peterman catalog with ads just like the one Elaine had to write?
Really?
Of course, Sherman. I thought it would be fun to ask the 91.1 players to read some of those ads. Many are even dialogues. So everyone, stiffen your lower jaws and learn how the other half lives from the stories of J. Peterman.
Sporting life at Lake Como.
In Milan, they wear silk suits to board meetings, and everyone calls them signore. At the fishing lodge near Lake Como, they rough it in luxurious plaid shirts and go by their nicknames. Pippo, Big Fig, and Spider. Pippo leads the way up a crunchy gravel path to an apparently modest log cabin in the pines.
Here, Peterman,
he assures me,
one can live like a man.
The space inside is startling, almost vast. High beam ceiling with stuffed hawk on a rafter, glowing pine walls hung with crossbows, English shotguns, Scottish split bamboo fishing rods and boar's heads, a large rough-cut stone fireplace with an ancient black iron roasting spit. Big Fig opens the door of an old hand-carved walnut cabinet, takes out a box of Cohibas and a bottle of Jack Daniels, puts them down on the polished top.
Tonight?
Spider announces.
It's poker night.
He extracts the cork from the bottle and tosses it ceremoniously into the fireplace. All in all, I think I was lucky to get off with being nicknamed Horse. Lake Como shirt, number 1416, in warm, soft, non-scratchy Italian wool fabric. The best. 3 1/4-inch button-down collar and rayon neckband. Adjustable cuffs, patch pocket, obsessively pattern-matched. Made in Portugal. Not that, Greta.
It's called a sound, Peterman, because of the Viking word sund, meaning swim.
I'd not even met Greta yet, but she overheard me inquiring about certain large bodies of water and their peculiar names.
It's bigger than a bay. Don't you know geography? You travel, don't you?
As the Brits would say, she enjoyed taking the piss. Then this.
Did you know the Vikings also gave us the word for die and cake? Who wants to live in a world without cake? I would surely die.
Well, we became fast friends. Greta's cobalt blue silk blouse, number 5396. Smart, brazen, luxurious, 100% silk crepe de chine, crossover faux wrap neckline, 3/4 sleeves. Flattering peplum shape below the elastic waist. Self fabric tie belt, side vents, imported.
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve?
Oh, you know how the rest goes. Bacall was 19 when she said that to Bogey. She stole the film and his heart. She had it. Others did too. Hepburn, Bergman. Smart and opinionated beauties like them struck a chord with America because they weren't caricatures. Something called substance, grace, and style. Comes from a time when being sexy didn't mean obvious, when mystery was actually mysterious, when icons were iconic. The knit suit jacket, number 2838, slightly nipped in the waist and flared at the hem for that classic 1940s look. 100% merino wool. Double knit jersey on body and sleeves. Gives the fabric more substance. The jewel neckline can be folded back depending on your strategy. Pants pair well with the knit suit skirt, number 2840. A bellboy's infatuation.
I carried up her luggage, overhearing her cell phone conversation.
Oh, he's handsome. We'll see.
It was the "we'll see" that prompted me to turn around, to find her unblinking stare set upon me, sending my heart aflutter. But I couldn't hold her gaze, making it clear that I was the bellboy, not the bellman. Later that night, I saw her at the gala, wearing a little black dress, flared at the bottom with slender velvet gloves and a long crystal necklace, she twirled in her fingers. She was with a man, but he would be excused rather early. As she left the gala, I saw her gloves still on the table and followed her to the elevator, where I found her still twirling the necklace. Was she waiting for me? Had I missed the signals? Too late now. I handed her the gloves, and our eyes and our hands locked for longer than was comfortable. The necklace fell slack in her hand, and I pulled her close, sending her heart aflutter. The mermaid flare dress, number 4405, 100% polyester, scoop neckline, French bust darts, upper calf length with textured shimmering flounce, back-fitting darts, fully lined, imported.
Absolutely captivating. Impossible to look at anyone else now that you've arrived to capture hearts in the available light and annoy the competition. Palazzo Party Pants, number 2880.
Darling, Somerset and Aldous will be there. So will Scotty and Zelda.
Do you like my new pants?
We don't have to get there precisely on time, do we? Sexy, wide-legged palazzo style introduced on the Riviera in the 1920s. Ours in a rayon silk velvet. Clean Hollywood waistband and fitting darts fully lined, 30-inch inseam, with a special affinity for pearls of all kinds. Did you think we would leave you with just a spectacular top and scarf? Imported. Women's sizes, 0 through 20. Color, black.
And what better way to end our show than with the final scene from Casablanca?
Because you're getting on that plane.
I don't understand. What about you?
I'm staying here with him till the plane goes safely out way.
No, Richard, no. What has happened to you last night?
Last night we said a great many things. You said I was due to think it for both of us. Well, I've done a lot of it since then. It all adds up to one thing. You're getting on that plane with Victor where you belong.
But, Richard, no.
Now you've got to listen to me. Do you have any idea what you'd have to look forward to if you stayed here? 9 chances out of 10, we'd both wind up in a concentration camp. Isn't that true, Louis?
I'm afraid Major Strasser would insist.
You're saying this only to make me go.
I'm saying it because it's true. Inside of us, we both know you belong with Victor. You're part of his work, the thing that keeps him going. If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon, for the rest of your life.
What about us?
We'll always have Paris. We didn't have it. We lost it until you came to Casablanca. We got it back last night.
When I said I would never leave you...
And you never will. I've got a job to do, too. Where I'm going, you can't follow. What I've got to do, you can't be any part of. Yes, I'm no good at being noble. But it doesn't take much to see that the problems of 3 little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that. Now. Here's looking at you, kid.
That was a great show, Mr. Peabody.
Indeed it was, Sherman. Now it's time to turn things over to our announcer.
The stars of Play It Again, Sam, great scenes from screens large and small, were Chris Brooks, Renee Bushell, Siegfried Christoff, Art Dexter, Vicky Dumay, Todd Eves, Emily Gardner, Brett Podek, Gary Lean, Susan Lean, Jim McClure, Janelle Powers, Larry Rowe, Ryan Schrader, Cameron Spencer, and Joe Van Pulley. Special sound effects were created by Mike Alstrup. Recorded sound effects were created by Steve Brown. The show was directed by Vicky Dumay. Play It Again, Sam, great scenes from screens large and small, was written by Steve Brown and Mike Alstrup. And today's announcer was yours truly, Julie Burton. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha law firm of Aaliyah Dumay, Dunn, and McTernan, a full-service law firm with an emphasis on personal injury, civil litigation, and business law. And from Lake Lawn Resort on beautiful Delavan Lake in Delavan, Wisconsin, your ultimate destination for year-round leisure getaways, family retreats, weddings, and group meetings. And also supporting the WGTD Radio Theater is the not-for-profit Brown Alstrup Performing Arts Foundation, located in Salem Lakes, Wisconsin. The mission of the foundation is to develop and promote excellence in the performing arts in Wisconsin and the Midwest. Join us on December 9th for the new and